Narayanam namaskritya naram shiv narot samam devim sesutim vyasam tato jayam adhiriye nashta prisha padeshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati chamashroke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 2nd chapter, verses 17 to 35. Maitre Racha Vinin Yavam Sagirisham Apatipam Avastitam Dakshatapa Paspisha Kutha Shaptum Pachakame. Sage Maitreya continued, "Thus Daksha, seeing Lord Shiva sitting as if against him, washed his hands and mouth and cursed him in the following words." So yesterday we heard Daksha angrily criticizing Lord Shiva. But wonderfully, in the chapter, in the Sanskrit, Lord Shiva is being glorified. What are some of the words that we found in yesterday's verses which glorified Lord Shiva? You remember? What's that? Yashokana. Yes. He destroys everyone's fame by his fame. And what else? Yes. Nirapatrapa. Yes. The shelter of one of those who are stunted. And what else? In the beginning of the chapter, there were some nice verses too. Yes. Charachara Guru. Yes. Yes. The Guru of both animate and inanimate beings. So how merciful he is. And another, any more Sanskrit words to describe him? Bhutanat. Bhutanat, yes. Ashutosh. Dharmavatsala, yes, that was from fourth canto we got. It's easy. Dharmavatsala. He's very dear. He follows the principles of Dharma. And Shanta Vigraham. He's a personification of peace. Nirvairam, he's not envious to anyone. So these are the wonderful qualities of Lord Shiva. So then we found that Daksha was criticizing him, that he's polluted, of course, the name and fame. But actually, all the words that are coming out of Daksha's mouth apply to him. We will see that Daksha, by criticizing Lord Shiva, will spoil his name and fame. He is not behaving properly. And so on and so forth. All the criticisms of Daksha apply to Daksha. And what principle did we learn yesterday about if somebody criticizes, if somebody finds fault with somebody else, what does that actually mean about that person? Yes, he has that fault in himself. And that's why he sees it in others. Atmavan manite chigat. So we also discussed yesterday Vaishnava Aparad, and we discussed the Anarthas. And at the end, after the class, Adi Purusha Prabhu gave me some extra connections here with the four types of Anarthas from Madhurya Kadambani. There's four types of Anarthas, four causes of Anarthas. The four causes. What's the exact word for Sukritis? Sukritota. So this means that reactions or anarthas. Okay, anarthas arising due to one's pious activities. So we connected that with asatrishna. Then if you have this kind of anarthas connected to pious, you desire heavenly planets, mystic powers, liberation. These are the desires of someone who has anarthas due to pious activities. If someone has anarthas due to impious activities, duskritota, then there is illusion, ignorance of one's position. Ignorance of one's position. So then if you have anarthas due to arising from bhakti, then we get hridar dabayam, weakness of heart, envy, attachment to things not connected to Krishna. The things that we heard about yesterday. And if you have anarthas arising from aparad, that will cause further aparad. that is a cause of aparad also. Yes. If you commit aparad, in the future again, you will get the seed. And we can see this in the life of Daksha as we're studying in Srimad Bhagavatam, that again, in his next birth, he will commit Vaishnava aparad by cursing the pure devotee of the Lord. Again, same offense. So these are some lessons we learned yesterday in our reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so now we'll go on to verse 18. Now this is the curse of Daksha. The demigods are eligible to share in the oblations of sacrifice, but Lord Shiva, who is the lowest of all the demigods, should not have a share. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that this curse is a blessing for Lord Shiva. Why is it a blessing for Lord Shiva? Yes. 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 Right. So here Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva was saved from the calamity of taking part with other demigods who are all materialistic. So this shows us that Lord Shiva is far above the rest of the demigods. He's in another category. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. He's a Mahajan, whereas the rest of the demigods are mixed. According to this purport, the rest of the demigods are in mixed devotional service. So we're learning who is a devotee, who is a pure devotee, who is a mixed devotee. This is one of the main lessons that we learn in this canto. Prabhupada said, Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is not fitting for him to eat or sit with materialistic persons like the demigods. Thus, the curse of Daksha was indirectly a blessing, for Shiva would not have to eat or sit with other demigods who were too materialistic. So then Prabhupada gives a really wonderful example comparing Gaur Kishore Das Babaji to Lord Shiva, that he was actually doing the same thing. There is a practical example set for us by Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who used to sit on the side of a latrine to chant Hare Krishna. Many materialistic persons used to come and bother him and disturb his daily routine of chanting. So to avoid their company, he used to sit by the side of a latrine where materialistic persons would not go because of the filth and obnoxious smell. However, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was so great, he was accepted as a spiritual master of such great personality as His Divine Grace Om Vishupad Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. The conclusion is that Lord Shiva behaved in his own way to avoid materialistic persons who might disturb him in his prosecution of devotional service. So, who would ever think that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and Lord Shiva are comparable in their behavior? So, but Prabhupada makes a comparison here, a quite interesting comparison, because the mentality is the same. They want to avoid bad association. So the bad in this material world, everyone wants to associate with those who are wealthy and up in the material world, but the Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was thinking that it's better to be in the latrine than to associate with these. And Lord Shiva, it's better to be in the crematorium with the skulls. And these people will surely not come near Lord Shiva. What's that? Mother Kunti. Acha. Oh, yes. Namo Kinchana Vitaya. Nivritta Guna Vitaya. Yes. So, Krishna, are there any other examples of this sort of behavior that we know of in the history? Rishabdev, okay? Yes, that's true. Prabhupada said on a tape he used to roll in his stool so that his people wouldn't come near him. Chadabharat, yes. Actually, it was very interesting. I was listening to a tape on Rishabdev, and Srila Prabhupada said, here is a test of an incarnation. You tell him to pass stool, and if it smells very nice, then he's an incarnation. So that was quite interesting. test for incarnations. Yes. So who can imitate Lord Rishabhdev, Lord Shiva, and Gaur Kishordas Babaji? So there was one story about Gaur Kishordas Babaji, you've probably heard it, that Prabhupada tells it in a lecture in Mayapur, 1974, that he was lecturing on Kunti's prayers 1826, and there is this one Maharaj, and he came to Gaur Kishordas Babaji. He said, "Please come to my Sankirtan festival." And Gaur Kishore said, "Why are you asking me? You want me to become one of your tenants also? Like you have so many tenants, so you want me to be one also?" And so the guy said, no, whatever you order, I will carry out immediately. So Gaur Kishore said, "Okay, whatever I order, you will carry out immediately." He said, yes, anything. So he said, "Okay, just sit down here. Don't go back home. Leave everything and sit here and chant Hare Krishna." So that was it. Then he left. And Prabhupada was like that too. Well, here's some stories about Prabhupada. That he also did the same thing with materialistic people in India. Burijan gives an example here. Sometimes Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj would put chicken bones outside his kutir so people wouldn't bother him. So this is interesting. So why did he didn't want to associate? Because their association is contagious. We catch their consciousness. We associate with materialistic people. And we start to think like they do. We start to desire like they do. So that's why it's so dangerous. So asat sanga tyag. So the lesson we learned also yesterday, also today, don't judge by externals. So this, again, this is the theme, one of our themes. Prashanta, you have something to say?
No, I think Shukadeva
also. Yes. Yeah, Shukadeva Goswami. To some extent. The common people, they just made fun of him. They ran after him. So who is a Vaishnava, actually? Yes. Of course. He's preaching. What's the question? Which example? Lord Shiva's. Okay. The question is, if we're not strong enough, should we just avoid association of materialistic people? That's the question. So what's the answer? If you preach, it makes you stronger, she says. What do you say? You agree? Yes. We are protected by Lord Chaitanya. We are protected. This is a fact, but we have to take the protection. I said, Srila Prabhupada, he was always praying for protection from fall down. Lord Brahma was praying for protection from fall down. So we have to pray. Always pray. Always be. Never think, okay, now I've succeeded. Now I've conquered. Now I'm transcendental. Immediately. Even if you think like that, you fall down. You're fallen. In a lecture, Srila Prabhupada explained that Gaur Kishordas Babaji was saying, to hell with them. They're just too much maya. He said, but my Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was very merciful. And he preached. And we are following him. So the point is that we are in the line of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, we were probably in the line of Gaur Kishordas Babaji before we became devotees, a lot of us. We were dressing, I speak for myself, but we were in that line of doing, but not for the right reasons. Renouncing materialistic life, but without any purpose. So if you try to imitate these people, Prabhupada warns us all the time, don't try to imitate this behavior. You will fall down. You're not qualified for that. Until you actually attain. When you attain bhava, then you'll know. When you start seeing the lila in your heart, and you start seeing all these things, and then you'll know, okay. But even then, in the Nectar Devotion, it says, even if you have attained this stage, you still follow the rules and regulations. And Prabhupada was like that. We follow his behavior. Very rarely did he even exhibit, transcendental symptoms like that. And he never behaved like Gorkhashoda's, he was the opposite of Gorkhashoda's Babaji. And he was always, he said, if you actually want to repay me, then you should preach. And we have, and that's how we learn dependence on Krishna, by taking the step, even though we always think we're unqualified. You know, that's the mentality of a devotee. And that's good. We always think we're unqualified. But if we take the step and depend on Krishna, then Krishna helps. Yes. Yeah, he was preaching. Yeah. He had his own style. So who is the Vaishnavas? Yes. Okay. Who said that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, the best preacher is the Bhajanandi who preaches. Okay? Yes, Adi Purusha.
Preaching doesn't have to be asatsanga.
Yes, you're giving association. This is the point. You don't want to take their association. And sometimes devotees, this is a misconception with devotees, they sometimes think you need to take their association. Yes.
Also, since Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj established the preaching in all classes, not only to serve them, but the Krishna consciousness of the movement, all classes of people, and it aims actually to speak for many people.
Right.
Whereas if you speak in a scenario where it's all restricted to the.
Right. It was a different culture. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes, giving association. Right. It's a symptom that if you have understood what you have heard, then you will preach. You will speak. Because you have Shravanam and then Kirtanam, Smaranam. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. You'll remember, you'll think, you'll, and then you'll preach. Kirtanam. So these all go together. So the question is, who is a Vaishnava? And so Srila Prabhupada actually knew who is a Vaishnava. He didn't remain in India. He went to make Vaishnavas all over the world. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he knew who is a Vaishnava. When one time he was in, I think, Banaras, at the house of Chandrasekhar, and he said, can you go outside? There's a Vaishnava at the door. So Chandrasekhar went outside and looked. He said, there's no Vaishnava. He says, is there anyone at the door? Lord Chaitanya said. He said, yeah, there's some Muslim mendicant. They go bring him in. So how could you know that this is Sanatan Goswami, dressed as a Muslim? If he were walking on the street and we saw him, we'd think, oh, some Muslim mendicant. But it's Sanatan Goswami. So how do you know who is a Vaishnava? Radhanath, yes? Who said? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. I'm leaving Radhakund because there's no Vaishnavas here. Okay? I have a nice story about Radhanath Swami and Srila Prabhupada. Because before Radhanath Swami joined ISKCON, he was wandering all over India looking for a guru. And he was dressed like a mendicant with matted, he's dressed like a sadhu, mendicant with matted hair. He had a begging pot. And he just looked like some regular Indian mendicant. And he was going to all the Mayavadis, he went to Vrindavan, to all the Goswamis, to all the Babajis, he went to all the Christian saints, the Muslim saints, looking for a guru. So finally he came to Bombay to, because he had to renew his visa or something or get an extension. And at that time, in 1971, the Bombay Pandal was going on and Srila Prabhupada was there in the Pandal. Thousands and thousands of people were at the Pandal. And he also came. And he sat in the very, very back, in back of thousands of people. So Prabhupada went up on the stage and he sent Guru Das back in the back of the thousands of people to bring Radhanath Swami and told him to sit next to him on the stage. So who would know that this hippie that looked like a sadhu was a devotee. So Prabhupada knew. He sent Gurudas back. Gurudas took him by the hand and said, Prabhupada wants you to sit next to him. So Prabhupada brought him back there on the stage. So then Radhanath Swami, he didn't exactly surrender at that point. He's very attached to Vrindavan. So he went back to Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada came to Vrindavan. And so he came and he was always sitting in Prabhupada's room getting his association. So at that time he was going on parikrama with the devotees. He was following the program, going to whatever, arti, and he was chanting japa. So one time he was sitting in Prabhupada's room, and when devotee came to take him away, he was saying, no devotees now can sit with Prabhupada. We have to do Harinam now, we have to do services. So Radhanath Swami pointed to his matted hair. He said, I'm not a devotee. He wanted to sit with Prabhupada and get his association. And Prabhupada smiled and looked at the other devotee, and the devotee went away, and Radhanath Swami sat there in the darshan. So, anyway, who is a devotee? This is the question that we will resolve, hopefully by the end of this canto. Who is a devotee? Who is a Vaishnava? So now, verse 19. Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, in spite of the requests of all the members of sacrificial assembly, Daksha, in great anger, cursed Lord Shiva and then left the assembly and went back to his home. So, what is the symptom here of devotional service in the mode of ignorance that we find? Actually, a couple of symptoms. Maybe even more than a couple. In this verse, yeah.
Great anger.
Cursing.
Leaving.
So leaving the assembly, how is that a symptom of separatist? Mm-hmm. Prabhupada explains his mentality. Anger is so detrimental that even a great personality like Daksha, out of anger, left the arena where Brahma was presiding and all the great sages and pious and saintly persons were assembled. All of them requested him not to leave, but infuriated he left, thinking the auspicious place was not fit for him. Puffed up by his exalted position, he thought that no one was greater than he in argument. It appears that all the members of the assembly, including Lord Brahma, requested him not to be angry and leave their company, but in spite of all these requests, he left. That is the effect of cruel anger. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, it is advised one who desires to make tangible advancement in spiritual consciousness must avoid three things: lust, anger, and the mode of passion. Actually, we see lust, anger, and passion make a man crazy, even though he be as great as Daksha. So passion, there is another word in Gita, which is greed. Lust, anger, and greed. Here Prabhupada says lust, anger, and passion. The very name Daksha suggests he was expert in all material activities, but still, because of his aversion towards such a saintly personality as Shiva, he was attacked by these three enemies. So, the very name Daksha suggests he was expert in all material activities, but still, because of his aversion towards such a saintly personality as Shiva, he was attacked by three enemies: anger, lust, and passion. Lord Chaitanya therefore advised one be very careful not to offend the Vaishnavas. He compared offenses toward a Vaishnava to a mad elephant. As a mad elephant can do anything horrible, so when a person offends a Vaishnava, he can perform any abominable action. So Daksha, he even criticized Lord Brahma. So we are being advised, we are being warned by Srila Prabhupada here, not to commit Vaishnava Parad. So what examples do we hear in scripture of devotees in Chaitanya Lila? Any examples? Yeah. Ramachandra Puri offended Lord Chaitanya. Yes, offending the other Vaishnavas too. Another one is there of Amoga.
That, his own spiritual master.
Yeah, he offended his own spiritual master he was trying to instruct.
Started
with that. Yes, he offended Madhavendra Puri, and that was the beginning of his fall down. So I have the Lila of Amoga, that he was, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya invited Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for lunch, and he was guarding the door with a stick. So because he knew Amoga, his son-in-law, was a great fault finder. Said as soon as he was inattentive when he was giving prasad to Lord Chaitanya, Amoga came in and started saying, this much food is enough for 10 or 12 people, and this one sannyasi is eating all of it. So then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya got really angry. He started chasing him with a stick, but he couldn't catch him. And then his wife, when she heard of it, she started to beat her head and beat her chest, saying, let my daughter become a widow. So then Lord Chaitanya, he saw their mood, he tried to pacify them, and he ate so much prasad just to satisfy them. So then later on, Sarvabhauma said, if the man who blasphemed Lord Chaitanya is killed, his sinful action may be atoned. Now this is actually Madhya Lila 15, 261, going on to 260, I mean it goes onward, and before that also, so you can get the approximate location. Because there's a very nice purport I want you to hear telling the results of Vaishnava Parad. In a conversation between Markandeya and Bhagirath, it is said, my dear king, one who derides an exalted devotee loses the results of his pious activities, his opulence, his reputation, and his sons. Whoever blasphemes Vaishnavas goes down to the hell known as Maha Rorava. Anybody know that? What is that Maha Rorava hell? Maharorava. Yeah, we know that. Which one? The Ruus. The Ruu birds attack you with their sharp beaks. Okay, so this is... Now, there are six types of offenses to a Vaishnava given in this conversation between Markandeya and Bhagirath. To kill a Vaishnava, to blaspheme, to be envious, to be angry, not to offer obeisances, and not to feel joy. So there's two positive things that you do and two things if you don't do. If you don't offer obeisances and you don't feel joy upon seeing a Vaishnava, these are offenses. Now in Bhakti Sundarbha, Jiva Goswami quotes a statement from Dwaraka Mahatmya, which is also found in Hari Bhakti Vilas. One who criticizes Lord Vishnu and his devotees loses all benefits accrued in 100 pious births. Such a person rots in Kumbhipaka hell. What is that hell? Kumbhipaka.
Frying pan.
You get fried. You get boiled there. Kumbhipaka. And is bitten by worms as long as the sun and moon exist. So we don't want to make offense to Vaishnavas, do we? We don't. So one should never see the face of a person who blasphemes Lord Vishnu and his devotees or associate with such persons. In Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami quotes from Bhagavatam 10:74:40, if one does not immediately leave upon hearing the Lord or Lord's devotee blaspheme, he falls down from devotional service. Sati will tell in the fourth chapter, if you hear blasphemy, you should block your ears and go away. If you're able to kill, you should by force cut off the blasphemer's tongue and kill the offender, and after that give up your own life. So then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, well, maybe I should give up my own life. Then I can atone for this offense that was committed in my house. But he said, no, because my body and his body, they're bodies of Brahmins, so we cannot do this. So he says, okay, I will never see his face. I reject him. I give up my relationship with him. I'll never speak his name. And inform my daughter Sati to leave her husband. He said, if a husband is fallen, it's the wife's duty to relinquish the relationship. So that night, Amoga, he ran away, and the next morning he got cholera. He was dying of cholera. So then Sarvabhauma said, this is very nice. Just what I wanted to do, Providence is doing for me. So then he said, when one offends the Lord, karma immediately takes effect. Immediate karma. We can experience that in Vrindavan sometimes also, immediate karma. Even if you even in your mind, if you offend the devotee, you get immediate karma. So Gopinath Acharya informed Lord Chaitanya, both the husband and wife were fasting and Amoga was dying of cholera. So then Lord Chaitanya immediately ran to Amoga, placed his hand on his chest and spoke, The heart of a Brahmin is by nature very clean. Therefore, it is a proper place for Krishna to sit. Why have you allowed the chandala of jealousy to sit here also? In this way, you have contaminated a most purified place, your heart. However, due to association with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, all your contamination is now finished. You just get up and chant Hare Krishna. So this is Madhya 15, around 275-276. 15, 275-276, around there, these verses. So now we'll go back to the Daksha Yajna. Yeah, this is a purport of one of these verses. I'll tell you which, 15-261. Yes. A little discussion. Okay, a little one. Yeah. 15-261. That's the purport that has all the quotes about what happens if you offend a Vaishnava.
Discussion, just bring something up, say, in a society of devotees, which I was for 17 years now, you have seen devotees giving and talking, and you people joining and getting going away.
Yeah.
And there seems to be kind of a lot of offenses going on, or even devotees rejecting gurus and stuff. Now, one thing is, bhakti grows where there is just love and an unconditional thing.
Right, bhakti grows.
Not a beautiful language.
Right.
But I wonder, is it not enough hearing about offenses, or maybe hearing too much about offenses, which creates a...
So you think if we hear too much about offenses, it will create a what?
Well, it creates dishonesty, for instance.
Dishonesty.
Threatening
atmosphere. You cannot express yourself.
Yes,
yeah, so, well, sometimes in association of devotees, Haribol, welcome, Vrajabihari Prabhu. You're just in time for a nice conversation, and we can repeat the question of Sankirtan Das, Vaishnava Aparad.
Oh, I walk in
right. And we have an... Okay, what was your question? Let's repeat the question for the benefit of Vrajabihari Prabhu.
Yeah, okay.
Coming and going.
And there seem to be a lot of offenses.
Offenses committed. Yeah.
I wonder, the growth of bhakti, or the natural flow of bhakti is there when there is just love,
right.
Openness, frankness. Like
right.
Now, the hearing about offenses, I wonder if it's too much hearing about the danger of offenses, or maybe not enough hearing, that
it's causing... As a result of hearing... Okay, your question is, if there is too much talking about offenses or not enough talking about offenses, it creates a... Well, which one is it? Too much? Okay. No, this is actually a very good point. This is a very good point. Yes. Okay.
And I want to confirm this.
Okay, and she wants to confirm this point.
I was visiting a temple in Maharashtra, and I got this comment when I arrived there that some devotees were not coming to the temple because of this.
Because of?
When we come to the temple, there are so many devotees and we commit offenses.
Oh, they're afraid of committing offenses. Don't even. We won't associate with devotees because we're going to commit offenses. Okay, interesting, interesting, very interesting. So, what is the answer? I have an answer, but I want to see what you all say. Yeah. Yes, you. Yes, I believe this is Radhana Swami. See, they cultivate the service attitude. So this will counteract all the... This will make you say, oh, yes, you can associate. Why not go and serve them? Yes, Vrajabihari Prabhu.
Another thing people say is that due to a unnatural fear of offenses, we can't be honest with one another, and we can't actually work to improve the society when we're afraid to...
Yes.
...the person is like that, and the woman that she's like that.
Right, right. So his solution is that instead of being afraid of offenses, just... do the opposite. Instead of offending devotees, serve devotees. Instead of blaspheming the scriptures, glorify the scriptures. Glorify the devotees. Serve the devotees. Yes. And cultivate that mood of service, of preaching, yes. Yeah. Religion of fear. And again, right. So another point is that we should understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada. Yesterday we were talking a bit about this. Mood of Srila Prabhupada, which is following even the mood of Krishna. What is the character of Krishna's personality that we learned yesterday? One characteristic.
Compassion.
But how what is the extent of that compassion that we learned yesterday? No, that was the day before. Yeah. No, yesterday we were discussing how a noble person finds a very insignificant good quality in a person of doubtful character and help magnify the good qualities. One person who is not a noble person, like Daksha is giving us the example, he will take a small fault in a noble person. Like Lord Shiva is a saintly person. He's finding a small fault, he's magnifying it. So this is the behavior is being instructed to us here, that we should learn. This is a behavior we're supposed to learn here, that we take the, even in a person, Lord Krishna, he took Putana's quality of motherhood, even though she was a very doubtful character. She wanted to poison him. He didn't see the poison. He just said, no, she's my mother. And he gave the highest reward. So as devotees, we're meant to follow in this mood of Srila Prabhupada, where he took the lowest. As we discussed yesterday, he was on Hippie Hill, and the animals were around him in various dresses, and Prabhupada was transcendental, and he was seeing the good. The boys and girls were holding hands and dancing around him, and Prabhupada was very happy. He saw the good in it. So this is the Vaishnava. This is a characteristic of the Vaishnava. And if he preaches about offenses, nobody will be offended. If that sort of person, because he sees the good. And you know that person, he wants the best for me. So for my welfare, he's telling me. And when Prabhupada would chastise us, we felt that. It's for my good. It's for my growth in spiritual life. He was not envious. Okay, we better go on. Verse 20. We're on chapter 2, verse 20. We have just... Okay, I'll fill you in a little bit that the relationship we found between third canto and fourth canto, one is that Kapila Deva instructs about devotional service in the modes. So here in this canto, we're seeing in action devotional service in the modes. So we found some of the qualities of Daksha were actually the devotional service in the mode of ignorance. He left the assembly, so that showed out of anger, he was a separatist. He was angry and vengeful. That's another one. Vengeful. He cursed. Vengeful. So these are the qualities of a person who is in the mode of ignorance. He thinks he's the best devotee and he curses other devotees. Verse 20. Upon understanding Lord Shiva had been cursed, Nandishwar, one of Lord Shiva's principal associates, became greatly angry. His eyes became red, and he prepared to curse Daksha and all the brahmanas present there who had tolerated Daksha's cursing Shiva in harsh words. So, purport. There is a long-standing dissension among some of the neophyte Vaishnavas and Shaivites. They are always at loggerheads. So what's the fight about between the neophyte Vaishnavas and the Shaivites? What are they fighting about, these two? Siddhanta. Yes. They fight over the spot at Kumbh Mela. Well, this is the least of their quarrel, I think.
That's
the big one, okay. When they go to Kumbh Mela, they fight over the spot. Is there a spot where you're supposed to, everyone? And the time. Okay. So they fight over, that's one thing that's been going on since time immemorial, I guess. And what else?
Their discussion is who is supreme.
Who is supreme?
Shiva or Vishnu.
Shiva or Vishnu. Okay, it's based on Shiva and Vishnu. Some say that Shiva is God, some say Vishnu is God. This is their fight. So, Prabhupada says here, when Daksha cursed Lord Shiva in harsh words, some of the Brahmins present might have enjoyed it, because some Brahmins do not very much admire Lord Shiva. This is due to their ignorance of Lord Shiva's position. Nandishwara was affected by the cursing, but he did not follow the example of Lord Shiva, who was also present there. Although Lord Shiva could also have cursed Daksha in a similar way, he was silent and tolerant. But Nandishwara, his follower, was not tolerant. So Prabhupada said that's actually right. Nandishwara should have not been tolerant. But in the same moment, he should not have cursed the Brahmins. He should not tolerate the blasphemy. But then his reaction was also not correct, to curse the Brahmins. So some will say, yes, no, he offended my guru, so I will curse you. So in the name of Vaishnava Parad, of protecting your guru, you cannot curse another devotee. So these are so many lessons we can learn here in this lila about how we should behave.
What should
if somebody blasphemes your guru.
I think you should try to person.
Yeah, it's depending on you and your strength and your relationship with the person also. But blasphemy, it's best to go away.
Go away.
Conquer with argument. With argument. Yes. So Burija makes a nice comment here that in a group when there's anger or other emotions, everyone begins to experience those emotions. It catches. It's contagious. So Daksha was angry, now Nandishwara is angry, then the Brahmins are going to get angry. It's going to escalate, in other words. So 21, the first curse of Nandishwara. Anyone who has accepted Daksha as the most important personality and neglected Lord Shiva because of envy is less intelligent and, because of visualizing and duality, will be bereft of transcendental knowledge. So, again, Burijan's comment, what to learn in this chapter, the followers of Shiva and the followers of the Brahmins curse each other and counter-curse, although they are both within the Vedic system. And these are faults, as I put this up on the board, deviations within the Vedic system or Vedic culture. Two main deviations that we're learning about here in this chapter, and that is the smartas and the impersonalists, deviations from the Vedic Siddhanta. So he comments, the followers of Shiva tend to become Mayavadis and atheists, and the Brahmanas tend to become smartas. They follow the rules without knowing purpose, and they don't know the goal. So these two faults are going to be the essence of the curses that we hear today. Verse 22. Pretentiously religious householder life in which one is attracted to material happiness and thus also attracted to the superficial explanation of the Vedas robs one of all intelligence and attaches one to fruitive activities is all in all. So here we have the Sanskrit on the flip chart. Kuta dharma is pretentious household life. If you follow this, you get attached to karma tantra. And the result is vipanadhi, lost intelligence. So this is going back to the curse of followers of Lord Shiva. There is a nice quote in the sixth canto, third chapter, verse 25, where the verse says, because they are bewildered by illusory energy of the Lord, Yajñavalkya and Jaimini, other compilers of the religious scriptures, cannot know the secret, confidential religious system of the 12 Mahajans. They cannot understand the transcendental value of performing devotional service or chanting Hare Krishna mantra. Because their minds are attracted to the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas, especially Yajurved, Samaved, and Rigved, their intelligence has become dull. This is the curse. Thus, they are busy collecting the ingredients for ritualistic ceremonies that yield only temporary benefits, such as elevation to Swargaloka. They are not attracted to the Sankirtan movement because they're interested in dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That is 6.3.25. So Prabhupada gave a nice example of this, that when there was an installation here in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir, Srila Prabhupada said that unintelligent people, they want to see these huge sacrifices. So here, in order to please such unintelligent men, we had to hire very expensive Brahmins to perform costly sacrifices for the installation of Krishna Balaram temple. And Prabhupada said, because the inhabitants of Vrindavan, especially smarter Brahmins, will not accept Europeans and Americans as bona fide Brahmins. In spite of the yajnas, Prabhupada said, the members of our society perform sankirtan loudly with mridangas, and I consider the sankirtan more important than the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. So I think those of you who went to Mayapur for the installation might have experienced that the kirtan in the installation, so I've heard, was the actual installation of the deities, that the kirtan, the appearance of the holy name of Krishna, was actually what installed the deities. And this is what Prabhupada says is confirmed. So Vrindavan, Mayapur, both, the real installation is the Harinam. So Prabhupada said both the ceremonies were going on simultaneously. Ceremonies were meant for persons interested in Vedic rituals for elevation to heavenly planets, whereas Sankirtan was meant for pure devotees interested in pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by the Kirtan, Sankirtan, Lord Chaitanya was pleased to appear. And that was actually what called Lord Chaitanya to appear, and also Krishna Balaram. So this is Prabhupada. Now in the Sanskrit here, we have a word that should be familiar to a lot of you. In verse 22, Vedavada. That sound familiar? Vedavada. 243. Vedavadata. Yes. So what is the characteristics? What are the characteristics of these Vedavada? What is their philosophy? The Vedavadatas. Yes. Okay, flowery language. Yes. All in all. Yes. Karma Mimamsa. Yes. Yes. They don't know the goal. They think they have their goal. They have their goal. Sense gratification is the goal of the Vedavadaratas. So Prabhupada calls them a name in Krishna book, or he compares them actually to chained animals. Chained animals. Why would Prabhupada say Vedavadaratas are chained animals? Chained to material conception? Prabhupada says they are not able... Yeah, go ahead. Keep taking birth. Well, Prabhupada's explanation, they are not able to go beyond the jurisdiction of formalities of a certain type of faith. So these people, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am this, I am that. They're also like Vedavadaratas. I have this faith. Prabhupada says they're chained animals. So then in the Krishna book, this is chapter 87, Prayers Personified Vedas. I don't have the exact place because it's a huge chapter. Yes. Chained, C-H-A-I-N. You know a chain? Chain. You chain up a dog, you chain up animal. Yes, chained, they're chained. They're chained, their attachment to these, they cannot go beyond the rituals. So Prabhupada says, the Krishna conscious movement issues a supreme call to all kinds of religionists, asking them with great authority to join this movement, by which one can learn how to love God and surpass all formulas and formalities of scriptural injunction. Person who cannot overcome the jurisdiction of stereotyped religious principles is compared to an animal chained up by his master. So this is Prabhupada's comments. He goes on and on. Sridhar Swami has composed a nice verse. Let others engage in severe austerities. Let others fall to the land from the tops of hills and give up their lives. Let others travel to many holy places of pilgrimage for salvation. Or let them engage in deep study of philosophy and Vedic literature. Let the mystic yogis engage in their meditational service, and let the different sects engage in unnecessary arguing as to which is the best. But it is a fact, unless one is Krishna conscious, unless one is engaged in devotional service, unless one has the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cannot cross over this material ocean. That's Sridhar Swami's comment. So then Prabhupada comments, an intelligent person therefore gives up all stereotyped ideas and joins Krishna conscious movement for factual liberation. So I'll just read a short comment from Isha Upanishad, also describes in the ninth mantra, Isha Upanishad describes, in the Prabhupada describes in the Purport, they pose themselves as very learned in Vedic literature, but they're completely diverted from the purpose of the Vedas. So these are the Veda Vadaratas. Okay, Adi Purusha Prabhu, can you flip, turn the flip chart? So verse 23. Daksha has accepted the body as all in all. Therefore, since he has forgotten the Vishnu Pad or Vishnu Gati and is attached to sex life only, within a short time he will have the face of a goat. So this verse reminded me of a verse in 7th canto by Prahlad Maharaj, that he doesn't know the Vishnu Gati. Ate vidu swata gatim hi vishnum darashaya ye bahiratamanina andaya dhandaya upaniyamana stepishatantram murutam nibadha. Prahlad Maharaj says, because of their foolish activities, they are unaware the ultimate goal of human life is to achieve Vishnu, the Lord of the cosmic manifestation. And so, their struggle for existence is in the wrong direction, material, civilization, which is under the external energy. They are led by similar foolish persons, just as one blind man is led by another blind man, and both fall into the ditch. So what happens to these people? Yamaraj says, you bring these fools to me, who do not chant Hare Krishna, who do not engage in devotional service. So verse 24. Another curse by Nandishwar. Those who have become as dull as matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are nescently involved in fruitive activities. Such men have purposely insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So Prabhupada says in the purport, the three curses mentioned above are sufficient to make one as dull as stone, void of spiritual knowledge, and preoccupied with materialistic education, which is nescience. After uttering these curses, Nandishwara then cursed the Brahmins to continue in the cycle of birth and death because of their supporting Daksha and blaspheming Lord Shiva. So verse 24, Vidya Bhutir Avidyayam, bewildered by materialistic education, Karma Mayam Aso Jada, you will engage in fruitive activities, and the result will be Sangsarantu, you will revolve in the cycle of birth and death. Verse 25, may those who are envious of Lord Shiva, being attracted by the flowery language of the enchanting Vedic promises, who have thus become dull, always remain attached to fruitive activities. Verse 26, these Brahmins take to education, austerity, and vows only for the purpose of maintaining the body. They shall be devoid of discrimination between what to eat and what not to eat. They will acquire money begging from door to door simply for the satisfaction of the body. So verse 25, we have envious Haradvisha, attracted by the flowery words of the Veda, Shuttaya Pushpinya, will become dull, Unmattita Atmana. And the result, Samuhayanti, Samuhyantu, become attached to fruitive activities. So you can flip it again, Adi Prishpuru, and we'll see if we have verse 26. The Sanskrit is very nice, if you understand also the Sanskrit. Verse 26. Devoid of discrimination in eating, and they will be begging. So again, Bharijan makes a nice comment on this. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was walking one day in Navadvip and he saw a big fat Brahmin carrying a fish to eat. And he said to the Brahmin, you are so heartless. So all of these predictions have now come to pass. Anybody else have seen any examples of this? Maybe not the eating part. Yes? Yes, okay, good example. The Brahmins, they go to the West, or they go to engineering colleges, and, yes?
You fly with them on the plane.
You fly with them on the plane?
They're not even offered the choice between vegetarian and non-vegetarian.
Really?
They're offered the choice between chicken and beef.
Really?
On the
plane, they're offered the choice between chicken and beef. These Brahmins who fly to the West. They're hoping for non-vegetarian. It's too much, huh? When I was living in Goa, I used to drive a TVS, to go from beach to beach, so I had this person who used to do servicing for my TVS, and he was a Brahmin, and he had his Brahmin thread, and he was covered with oil from top to foot. And then at 12 o'clock, he would take a bath and go do his puja in the temple. Then after 1 hour, he'd eat, and he'd come back and be covered from head to foot with the oil. And they would call him Panditji also. So these are examples of Kali Yuga Brahmins, some of them anyway. So Prabhupada says in the purport, the third curse inflicted by Nandisha on the Brahmins who supported Dakshas, completely functioning in the age of Kali. So-called Brahmins are no longer interested in understanding the nature of the Supreme Brahman. Instead, they want to understand the nature of the machines, the computer, all these things. That is their interest. So then, Prabhupada says, unfortunately, the modern Brahmins, or so-called Brahmins, who come in originally Brahminical families, have left their own occupational duties. They do not allow others to occupy the posts of Brahmins. End of the purport. Such fallen conditioned souls are not worthy to be called Brahmins, but in Kali Yuga they claim to be Brahmins, and if a person actually tries to attain Brahminical qualifications, they try to hinder his progress. This is the situation in the present age. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu condemned this principle very strongly. During his conversation with Ramananda Roy, he said that regardless whether a person is born in a Brahmin family, Shudra family, regardless of whether he's a householder or a sannyasi, if he knows the science of Krishna, he must be a spiritual master. So that verse is Kipa Vipa Kipa Nyasi Shutokene Noi Jai Krishna Tattva Vita Sri Guru. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had many so-called Shudra disciples, like Haridas Thakur and Ramananda Roy. Even the Goswamis, who were principal students of Lord Chaitanya, were also ostracized from Brahmin society. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his grace, made them first-class Brahmins. So according to the Smarta Brahmins, for us to become Brahmins, we will have to, our next birth, take birth from a Brahmani in a Brahmin family. This is a Smarta Vichar. Goswami Vichar is different. We were discussing that, I think, yesterday. What is the verse that proves that a person may become a Brahmin even in this life? Yata kanchanatang yati kangsyang rasa vidhanata by Sanatana Goswami. And the other one? Yanamadeya swavanam kirtanat. The one that we quote from Kapiladev. So if Prabhupada says if he's properly initiated, he becomes more than a Brahmin. So even Lord Chaitanya was criticized by the Smartas that he's ruining the Hindu religion. They went to the Qazi. They said, this Nimai Pandit, he's ruining the Hindu religion because he's allowing low-class people to chant the holy name. And if low-class people chant the holy name, the potency of the name will be lost. So this was their criticism. Can you imagine? So this is actually in Adi 17:12. According to Hindu scripture, God's name is the most powerful hymn. If everyone hears the chanting, the potency will be lost. So this is one of the offenses in chanting, to think that it's just an auspicious ritualistic ceremony of the Vedas. Adi 17:12. There's some very nice verses there. So there, then in Antya Lila, chapter 5, verse 84, there's also some very wonderful verses. Even Antya 5:83, there is a characteristic of Lord Chaitanya. To vanquish the false pride of so-called renunciants and learned scholars, he spreads real religious principles even through a Shudra or low-born fourth-class man. He preached about devotional service by making Ramananda Roy, a grihastha, born in a low family, the speaker, and Lord Chaitanya himself, the exalted Brahmana, sannyasi, and Pradyumna Mishra, the purified Brahmin, became the hearers of Ramananda Roy. So these are the principles upon which our Krishna conscious movement are based. Whoever knows the science of Krishna, he is a guru, and even sannyasis can listen from a grihastha, born in a low family. Lord Chaitanya did it. Lord Chaitanya, he heard from Ramananda Roy, Shudra, grihastha. Pradyumna Mishra also did. Haridas Thakur, he says, Lord Chaitanya exhibited the glories of the holy name through Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family. He exhibited ecstatic love and pastimes of Vrindavan through Srila Rupa Goswami. So who can understand the influence of Lord Chaitanya? It actually is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you just get a drop of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, then you can preach the glories of Lord Krishna, can become guru. So this is the opposite of what is happening here in these curses. I think we better go on. We can do it at the end. 27. When all the hereditary Brahmins were thus cursed by Nandishwara, the sage Bhrigu, as a reaction, condemned the followers of Lord Shiva with this very strong Brahminical curse. Prabhupada says the word Dharatyaya is particularly used in reference to Brahmadanda, or cursed by a Brahmin. Cursed by a Brahmin is very strong, therefore it is called Dharatyaya, or insurmountable. As the Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, the stringent laws of nature are insurmountable. Similarly, if a curse is uttered by a Brahmin, that curse is also insurmountable. But, here's a loophole. Bhagavad Gita also says the curses or benedictions of the material world are, after all, material creations. Chaitanya Charitamrita confirms that which is accepted in this material world to be a benediction and that which is taken to be a curse are both on the same platform because they are material. So that is that. There is a verse. That is the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Antya Lila 4:176 that Prabhupada quotes here, that he paraphrases. So that verse is Dvaita Bhatra Bhatra Jnana Sat Mano Dharma E Phala E Manda Sabha Pram. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying this is good and this is bad is all a mistake. One has to understand in the material world of duality, to think this is good and that is bad is simply a mental concoction. However, one should not imitate this consciousness. One should be situated on the spiritual platform of neutrality. Well, the verse is CC Antya 4:176, but it's quoted in Bhagavatam 5:9:11. So I'm quoting it from a purport, actually, Srila Prabhupada. So Diti, when she heard that her sons would be killed by the Lord, she said, oh, this is wonderful. I'm so glad they're not going to be destroyed by the curse of a Brahmin. So Bali Maharaj, she said, I don't fear hell, poverty, an ocean of distress, fall down, or even death, as much as I fear cheating a Brahmin. So Brahmadanda is very, very powerful. Yes, danda. Danda is rod. Rod of chastisement, danda. So you can fall down like a rod, or you can be chastised by a rod. Danda, in either case. The word danda. Yeah. So, we will go to the next verse, verse 28. One who takes a vow to satisfy Lord Shiva, or who follows such principles, will certainly become an atheist and be diverted from transcendental scriptural injunctions. So paragraph 2, Prabhupada says, sometimes it is necessary to preach a philosophical doctrine which is against the Vedic conclusion. Heavy. So what does this mean? Sometimes it's necessary to preach against the Vedas. Yeah. Verse in Padma Purana. Mayavaram asashastram. Yes.
What Shira told is quite exciting, that I've been told by the Lord to preach in a disguised manner.
Right.
And actually it is something covered Buddhism.
Covered Buddhism.
And in the form of the guys of Brahman, Brahmana Vipina, so I will appear as Shankar, and I will preach this difference to be willing to do.
So that's exactly what Prabhupada says here in that purport. So we don't need to read all that. Prabhupada says, Bhrigu Muni, cursed persons who worship Lord Shiva would become followers of the Mayavad Asat Shastra, which attempts to establish the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impersonal. Besides that, among the worshippers of Lord Shiva, there is a section who live a devilish life. Srimad Bhagavatam and Narada Pancharatra are authorized scriptures that are considered Sat Shastra, or scriptures which lead one to the path of God realization. Asat Shastras are just the opposite. So verse 29. So we see here on this mind map, we'll discuss it a little bit later. Oh, and I forgot to put it up, besides the impersonalists. Yes, I omitted something here. There should be one more, and I'll put it on after the class. There should be, at the end of the class. They're impersonalists, and then the tantrics, who are within the Vedas, who follow Lord Shiva. The tantrics. Verse 29. Those who vow to worship Lord Shiva are so foolish, they imitate him by keeping long hair in their heads. When initiated into worship of Lord Shiva, they prefer to live on wine, flesh, and other such things. So these are the tantrics. This verse is describing those who perform tantric yoga and worship Lord Shiva. Nashtashocha mudhadiya jatabashmashtidharina. So the first curse, verse 28, bhava-vratta-dhara, if you take a vow to satisfy Shiva, you will become pashandi, atheist. Sat-shastra paripantina. So verse 28 refers to the mayavadis. Verse 29 refers to the tantrics. Nasta-shocha, unclean, mudhadiyo, foolish. Jastabashmastidharina, on the flip chart, long hair. Sura-savam, they live on wine, meat, and other such things. So these are the two types of followers of Lord Shiva that we find in India. There's a nice quote, again, from 5, 6, 10, describing the origin of another such sampradaya. The verse says, people who are lowest among men, bewildered by illusory energy of the Lord, will give up the original Varnashram Dharma and its rules and regulations. They will abandon bathing three times daily and worshipping the Lord. Abandoning cleanliness, neglecting the Supreme Lord, they will accept nonsensical principles. Not regularly bathing or washing their mouths regularly, they will remain unclean. They will pluck out their hair. Following a concocted religion, they will flourish. During this age of Kali, people are more inclined to irreligious systems. Consequently, these people will naturally derive Vedic authority, the follower of Vedic authority, the Brahmins, Supreme Lord, and devotees. So Prabhupada said that presently the hippies fit this description. That this was started by King Arhat. Prabhupada says there are many hippie groups at the present, but they all originated from King Arhat, who is a follower of King Rishabhdev. So here we have the hippies, there are some followers of Lord Shiva who are within the Vedic culture. So these two are listed in the verses. And there are some followers who are not within the Vedic culture, and these are the hippies. So they're outside, they're mlechas, but they also say, I am worshipping Shiva. What's that? Are there still hippies? I don't know, I live in India. In Goa, you see, last time I went to Goa, They're still worshipping Lord Shiva. They play the drum and they smoke ganja. They play Lord Shiva's drum. They have all-night parties and they worship Lord Shiva.
Most of them become
businessmen. Yes, after, huh? Because there's no money in that. There's no money in smoking ganja and worshipping Lord Shiva. Yes. They all become businessmen. So how to counteract... Prabhupada said, we can counteract this hippie movement by making them all devotees and making them chant Hare Krishna. Yes? You were smoking ganja with the hippies in Goa. And interesting, and you were worshipping Lord Shiva. What were the rituals for worshipping? What's that? You offered the chilam to Lord Shiva. Achha, that was your ritual.
It's
concocted, right, exactly. But it's not within the Vedic culture. So there are followers of Lord Shiva that are not within the Vedic culture, and there are followers of Lord Shiva who are within the Vedic culture. They have their tantras and shastras, and so they follow. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhupada's statement is actually very true, especially today with such people who love the Hare Krishna. And if we can contact them, it would be very easy to make them.
That's true. Yes, such people, even now, those who are hippies, grew up with the Hare Krishna movement. If we contact them, they can actually become reformed. Prabhupada said he was trying to preach to one chief of police in Chicago that, yes, I can turn all the drug addicts into devotees if you just help me, give me support. We have to have a change of heart, he was telling the police chief. And the police chief said, that's very difficult. Anyway, Prabhupada said, no, if you give us a nice building and support, give us money, we'll do it. But they didn't do it. So verse 30. Bhrigu Muni continued, since you blaspheme the Vedas and the Brahmanas, who are followers of the Vedic principles, it is understood that you have already taken shelter of the doctrine of atheism. So Bhrigu here, the curse is also saying that just by your behavior already, it shows that you're an atheist. You're blaspheming the Vedas and the Brahmins who follow the Vedas. Purport in the middle, Prabhupada says, the Vedas are the mother and the Brahmins are the father. If one blasphemes the Vedas and Brahmins, one goes down to the status naturally of atheism. The exact Sanskrit word is nashtik. One who does not believe in the Vedas but manufactures some concocted system of religion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, the followers of the Buddhist system of religion are Gnostics. In order to establish his doctrine of non-violence, Lord Buddha flatly refused to believe in the Vedas. Thus later on, Shankaracharya stopped this system of religion in India, forced it to go outside India. So the actual verse glorifying Lord Buddha, Nindasi yagya viteraha shiti jatam sarayahi dayadashita pashugatam Keshavatrita Bhuta Sharira Jaya Jagadish Hare Jaya Jagadish Hare Jaya Jagadish Hare. So again, he was preaching against the Vedas, but he was outside the Vedic culture, Buddhist. He said, don't follow the Vedas. So then Shankaracharya preached against the Vedas within the Vedas. Within the Vedic culture. Come back to the Vedas, but the philosophy was against. So this is covered Buddhism. So these things are going on, and the followers of Lord Shiva are being cursed to become Pashandis and atheists. Adi Purush Prabhu, can you turn the flip chart again? We'll see if we have anything on the next. No, we don't. Okay, it's all right. That's it. So, verse 31. The Vedas give the eternal regulative principles for auspicious advancement in human civilization, which have been rigidly followed in the past. The strong evidence of this principle is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called Janardhan, the well-wisher of all living entities. Now, this is a very big purport, which I'm not going to read, but I'll see who read it. I'll ask you some questions. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada establishes the authority of the Vedas. He tells how are the Vedas, authority of the Vedas established. Prashanta.
One of the points he makes is that those who don't follow the Vedas, they become degraded.
Okay. Well, this is actually the verse. The verse is saying, by blaspheming the principles of the Vedas, they will descend. So, okay, so they will become. Prabhupada said, this is a proof. Yes, if you follow the Vedas, you're elevated. If you don't follow, you become... Yeah, the degraded persons usually don't follow the Vedas. Amavipuri.
The Vedas are also called
Setu. Setu, bridge. Yes.
They pave the way to attain spiritual existence.
Mm-hmm.
That's to cross the ocean of nests.
Right.
So they have a bridge to...
Right. Yeah, so the paragraph that I picked out of this purport as being the most important is paragraph 2. Because in this paragraph, Prabhupada gives many evidences of the Vedas. He says in the beginning, it is said, Tene Brahma Hrida, the Lord instructed Brahma in Vedic knowledge through his heart. Therefore, the evidence that Vedic knowledge is free from defects, mistakes, illusion, cheating, and imperfection is that it is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardhan, and has been followed from time immemorial, beginning from Brahma. So the evidence that it's true is that it's spoken by the Lord, and it's followed by all the great personalities. Highly cultured population of India since time immemorial, it is Sanatan. And again, what you said, it's a bridge. This is from paragraph 2. And the last paragraph also I found was very good. At the end, the conclusion is that persons who rebel against the Vedic principles are themselves the evidence that the Vedas are authoritative, because by not following the Vedic principles, they become like animals. So these are proofs that the Vedas are authoritative. And this is the argument of Bhrigu. By blaspheming the Vedas, he says, anyway, you're already an atheist, because you're blaspheming the Vedas and the Brahmins, who are very dear to Krishna. So then this is verse 32. It says basically the same thing. By blaspheming the principles of the Vedas, which are the pure and supreme path of the saintly person, certainly you followers of Bhutapati, Lord Shiva, will descend to the standard of atheism without a doubt. So Bhutapati, Lord of the Ghosts. And in the purport, Prabhupada says Lord Shiva is described as Bhutarat. The ghosts and those who are situated in the material mode of ignorance are called Bhutas. So Bhutarat refers to leader of the creatures who are in the lowest standard of the material modes of nature. Another meaning of Bhuta is anyone who has taken birth or anything which is produced. So in that sense, Lord Shiva may be accepted as the father of this material world. Now I have a question for Vajrabihari Prabhu, since he came... No, you are an expert in this field of conflict resolution. No, not Buddhas. Because here we have a conflict between two parties. Do you think it's possible to mediate in this case? Are the conditions good here for mediation between the followers of Lord Shiva and the Brahmins? You think it would be possible to come to a solution through mediation? Yes?
Maybe a little later on.
Later on. After the emotions die down, it might be possible. Okay? Okay. So in this stage, it wouldn't be possible. When everybody's cursing one another, it would be practically very difficult to do conflict resolution. Yes. Right.
That'll.
Okay. Someone doesn't have a head, it's hard to mediate. Okay, that's a good answer. So what...
The other possibility is to, say nip it in the bud.
Nip it in the bud.
Do it before the
person. Yeah, so my second question would be, like, there was some problem between Daksha and Lord Shiva. So before this happened, do you think it would have been possible to...
Set the two down.
Sit the two down together and... Right. Because Sati actually is going to try some mediation with her.
She didn't take the class.
She didn't take the class. Actually, it's quite interesting. We do find examples of mediation. I think last year, was it something happening last year with Lord Brahma and he came to mediate? I don't remember what it was. It? Jai Vijay and the four Kumaras. There was some mediation. Lord Vishnu was mediating there. And there are other examples within Srimad Bhagavatam of Lord Brahma is often...
Oh, there's one about Lord Brahma with Indra and son of Prithu.
Yes, yes. Yeah, in this canto we'll find an example of mediation with Brahma. It might be Vishnu.
That's very interesting, because what he does there is Brahma kind of... Basically, he gets on the case chastises Prithu's son.
Yes, yes.
Who was actually in the right.
Yeah.
Rather than Indra, who was in the wrong.
Who's in the wrong. Yeah, that's quite interesting.
And, the conclusion I get out of that is that sometimes, perhaps even often, especially in this one, peace or working together is more important than truth.
Yeah.
Or it is a kind of truth.
As far as mediation.
But sometimes, who cares who was right and who was wrong? Yeah. Stop this nonsense and get to work.
The point is that how you're behaving is more important than what happened, isn't it? Sometimes what actually happened is not important. Like here, okay, Daksha, he left. But then the behavior after that, it doesn't justify Daksha's behavior. As Prabhupada said, it doesn't the followers of Lord Shiva, they were right. This is the example right in the purport. Remember, anybody look up that purport? It's right in the purport. Actually, they were right not to tolerate the offense to Lord Shiva, but they were wrong to curse the Brahmins. So, see, the behavior doesn't justify the principle. The principle is, yes, you must not tolerate guru aparad, offense to your guru, but still, you cannot. That doesn't mean you can do anything you want. Yeah.
The Prabhupada says at the end of the purport on 20, the entire issue was so complicated that those who were not strong enough forgot their positions, and thus
yes.
The common person went on in that great assembly. In other words, the material field is so unsteady that even personalities like Manishwara, Daksha, and many of the Brahmins present were infected.
Yes, they were affected. They're affected. As he said, when the emotions are going, you can't mediate. So let's finish this chapter and then we can have some more discussion. The sage Maitreya said, this is verse 33, when such cursing and counter-cursing was going on between Lord Shiva's followers and the parties of Daksha and Bhrigu, Lord Shiva became very morose. Not saying anything, he left the arena of the sacrifice, followed by his disciples. So Prabhupada glorifies Lord Shiva's excellent character in spite of the cursing and counter-cursing between the parties of Daksha and Shiva, because he's the greatest Vaishnava. He was so sober, he did not say anything. A Vaishnava is always tolerant. Lord Shiva is considered the topmost Vaishnava, so his character, as shown in this scene, is excellent. He became morose because he knew these people, his men and Dakshas, were unnecessarily cursing and counter-cursing one another without any interest in spiritual life. From his point of view, he did not see anyone as lower or higher because he is a Vaishnava. So he was seeing both the sides equally. Lord Shiva was seeing even his followers and those. He was seeing both sides equally. They're both doing nonsense. They're not accomplishing anything by this cursing and counter-cursing. Stated in Bhagavad Gita, Pandita Samadarshana, one who is perfectly learned does not see anyone as lesser or greater because he sees everyone from the spiritual platform. So the only alternative left to Lord Shiva was to leave in order to stop his follower Nandishwar as well as Bhrigu Muni from cursing and counter-cursing. So one thing I caught from this scene here is that the third canto in one way is very similar to the beginning of the third canto, is very similar to the beginning of the fourth canto. Does anyone pick up what I see? Yeah, leaving home because he was not cursed, but he was blasphemed. Vidura was insulted by Duryodhan. Lord Shiva is being insulted by Daksha, and they both have the same reaction. They leave the place. Vidura leaves, and Lord Shiva leaves. They're both tolerant. Yeah, he left the palace. No, different reasons, but the reaction, they both left. They may have different reasons why they left, but they both left. I just thought that was an interesting something I saw. So tolerant. Why should we? Oh, we could get into a discussion, but I won't, because I want you to have your discussion. So I'll just give an example of why we should tolerate, of Srila Prabhupada's tolerance, because Srila Prabhupada also had wonderful qualities. 1975, Srila Prabhupada was flying from Kenya to South Africa for the first time. And on the same plane was a South African football team who had just won a game and they were celebrating on the plane, drinking and smoking and having a good time. So then the air hostess came and said, could you please stop smoking? It's a non-smoking section. And Prabhupada was in the same section as they were, the same part of the plane. And so they stopped. But then again, they just started, as soon as she went away, they started smoking again. So then Pushta Krishna, who was with Srila Prabhupada, he stood up and he was going to go to those men and say something. And Prabhupada said, where are you going? And Pushta Krishna said, well, they're smoking, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, sit down. And looked him in the eye and he said, what is the difference between them and us if we cannot tolerate? So this was Prabhupada's behavior of tolerance, toleration. The Lord Shiva, Prabhupada. They have these saintly persons have these qualities. So the last two verses, Sage Maitreya continued, O Vidura, All the progenitors of the universal population thus executed a sacrifice for thousands of years. For sacrifice is the best way to worship the Supreme Lord, Hari, the personality of Godhead. My dear Vidura, carrier of bows and arrows, all the demigods who are performing the sacrifice took their bath at the confluence of the Ganga and Jamuna after completing the yajna performance. Such a bath is called Avabrita Snan. After thus becoming purified in heart, they departed for their respective abodes. So this sacrifice appears to be at Prayag, Allahabad, because they took their baths at the confluence of Ganga and Jamuna. So in the purport, again, Prabhupada stresses that this, even though Lord Shiva and Daksha left, the sacrifice was not stopped. It was not destroyed for want of Shiva and Daksha. The sages went on with their activities. It may be assumed if one does not worship the demigods, even up to Lord Shiva and Brahma, one can nevertheless satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now Prabhupada gives this angle of vision. But in the later chapters, Prabhupada will give us the opposite angle of vision. Because Daksha is having the misconception that I don't need to worship the demigods. I just have to worship Lord Vishnu. To hell with the devotees. What?
Kanishta.
Kanishta, right. So we will see now Prabhupada is saying this side, but in, later on he will say also, but there's a problem if you get too much on the other side too. I discovered this when I was in New York Temple many, many years ago. I think it was 1994. I gave a Bhagavatam class, and there were some Indians, and afterwards they came up to me, and it was on this canto about Lord Shiva, chapter 24, Prayers of Lord Shiva. And they said to me, oh, thank you. You're the first one that didn't bash Lord Shiva in the class. So I said, that's interesting. I was saying, right, Shiva's our guru. Lord Shiva's our guru. We follow his instructions. And he's telling us to worship Krishna. So that's why we should worship Krishna. So anyway, these are things that are all, whatever we're learning in this canto, are misconceptions that we as devotees have, that we have to become free from. Especially we were discussing yesterday about the subtle anarthas. So now the gross anarthas are not so much manifest as you advance in devotional service, but the subtle anarthas are there. And in Prabhupada is giving us constant instruction here in his purports of all the different subtle anarthas that we may have as devotees and that we should become free from them. So then one last thing, because Prabhupada ends this purport very nicely in the last paragraph, so I like to end it like that. In this age of Kali, it is practically impossible to perform the Deva Yajna or sacrifices to the demigods. As such, in this age, Srimad Bhagavatam recommends Sankirtan Yajna. Yajnai Sankirtana Praya Jantihi Sumirasha. In this age, the intelligent person completes the performances of all kinds of yajnas simply by chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Tasmin Tushte Jagat Tushta. When the Lord Vishnu is satisfied, all the demigods who are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord are satisfied. So that's how Prabhupada ends this chapter. So now we can... We'll have questions in a minute. I'd just like you to notice this on the board here. And Prashanta, maybe you can come up and add one thing to the chart. This is a mind map. What's that? The tantrics, yes. The tantrics should be like the impersonalists coming out from the impersonal. Actually. Yeah, okay, coming up. No, it can be a deviation. Yeah, tantrics. Can be like impersonalists. Yeah, impersonalists. And there in the mode of ignorance, you can put ignorance. And there also become Pashandis, or atheists. So I'll just go over this very quickly. The deviations within the Vedic culture, we have the impersonalists and the tantrics, who are followers of Lord Shiva. The impersonalists blaspheme the Vedas. They're a lot in the mode of goodness because they're sannyasis often and they follow principles. But they blaspheme the Vedas, they become Pashandis. The tantrics are in the mode of ignorance. They eat wine, flesh, and do all these things. And they also become Pashandis. The other deviation is the smartas. They're in goodness, but they criticize the devotees. And they revolve. The result is they revolve in samsara.
Are they really in goodness? Mixed with passion.
Yeah. Basically, their main thing is goodness, that they follow the rules they're supposed to anyway. The smartas. I mean, they're into rules and regulations. They're into following without knowing the purpose. And then two of them outside of the Vedic culture are the hippies and who else? The ghosts. Followers of Lord Shiva. Yes.
But in the name of smartas, I would rather say they're in passion.
In passion, you would say. Okay. Okay, so we can correct this and say mixed goodness and passion. Okay.
It says in Jalila 19, 146, human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles, are considered silly. Among these, almost half simply gave lip service.
Right.
While committing all kinds of sinful activities.
Okay. All right, so goodness and passion.
So, in other words, they want to be in more goodness, but they are actually not even following.
Right. Okay, so any discussion now? We've got a few minutes. Rajbihari Prabhu?
How is it that a person was passing away that what they cultivate?
Yes, well, here it says. Okay, his question is, how is it that the impersonalist blasphemed the Vedas? Yes. They reject the bona fide acharyas? Like, they don't accept. What's that? They only accept Sankaracharya and they reject the bona fide acharyas? Yes.
What does that have to do with
blaspheming the Vedas? Okay, well, if they don't follow the acharyas, then they're blaspheming the Vedas. Is his line of thought, Apishanta? Yeah, that's what came in my mind also. Gona Vritti, they cover the real, like, they cover the Vedas by their explanations, which is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said.
They use the Vedas to cover the Vedas.
Yes, yes.
So they
blaspheme.
They blaspheme, but externally, they're quoting them.
They may quote the Vedas, yes.
They reject the Smriti.
Yeah, they do reject the Smriti. They reject the Smriti. Smriti Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, Ramayana. They quote Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Yeah, well, this is. Oh, the Vaishnava Smriti. Okay, Nectar Devotion, Narada Pancharatra, Nectar Devotion. But no, but actually, generally, Smriti means. No, but it also means that. Actually, it's both. It's both. Literature and pursuance of the Vedic version.
I'm just trying to say that it seems externally that obviously you understand internally.
Yeah.
They all the things about change, working on this about work out here, etc. But it
seems
externally they probably even go through some ritual of the artsy to the Vedas and basically the Vedas are not being a nice cloth.
Okay, so he's saying they go through rituals of worshipping the Vedas. But actually by Even Bhrigu says, you will blaspheme the Vedas. It says right here in the verse that you have blasphemed the Vedas. The followers of Lord Shiva have blasphemed the Vedas by criticizing Vedas. Yeah, blasphemy. Actually, I've got that in a future class where Tamal asked Prabhupada that question. I don't have it in this. I don't know. Maybe it'll be in next week's classes where Sati comes in and tries to mediate the conflict between her father and her husband. She actually, that's probably said, her purpose was to mediate. She was trying, but she failed, so she killed herself. It's pretty heavy. Adi Purush.
Lord Chaitanya, when he was speaking to the Mayavadis,
yes.
He said that Shankaracharya has misled the world by commenting that Vyasadeva was mistaken.
Okay, blasphemy. Okay, so Shankaracharya, The quote, which quote, what verse is this now? Adi 7.121, when Lord Chaitanya is discussing with the Mayavadis, he says that Shankaracharya has done a great disservice misleading people by criticizing Vedvyas, saying that he is mistaken. So then anyone who naturally follows Shankaracharya, he's automatically blaspheming the Vedas because he's accepting that Vyasadeva was made a mistake. Adi, what? 7.121.
Shankaracharya actually Vedanta.
Corrected Vedanta, he published. Uh-huh.
He made corrections.
He made corrections in his, the blasphemous version? In the first version. Oh, he made corrections on the Vedanta. Acha. Oh, he edited. So Shankaracharya published a book, Corrections on Vedanta. Something like, the book was about that. Okay, so if he says that Vyasa was mistaken, then that's a mistake. Mistaken. Shankaracharya, Lord Chaitanya says that Shankaracharya said that Vyasadeva was mistaken. And then so Shankaracharya is giving us the real picture. In other words, Shankaracharya said, this is reality, what Vyasa says is not. Present day, okay, now let's get to modern.
Yes,
modern impersonalists.
For the last 100 years,
they are not following Shankaracharya's philosophy. Okay? Maybe there are some who are. But the. Who? Govinda, Ravindasarup. Ravindasarup. Okay, Shankaracharya's philosophy is covered Buddhism. According to Shankaracharya, the world is false. Jagan, it doesn't exist.
So now, in the present day Mayavadi concept,
it's present. Daridranayan, yes.
Because Vivekananda was competing with the Christian missionaries.
Okay.
And he had to make a kind of philosophy which is relevant to this secular world, something like that.
Okay, so he was compromising with the Christian missionaries who were taking care of the poor people.
So now, when the people came up with Shankaracharya's philosophy, it's by the Hindu, theologist of the West, comes back to India, and people now believe that is Shankaracharya's philosophy. It's not.
Okay, so
and
what. Okay. So when he talks to the Western scholars, the Indologist, and shows actually what Shankaracharya says, the world does not exist, they're surprised. They don't believe. So it's quite.
He says that he had gone through that even before joining.
Okay.
And he understood by studying that actually Shankaracharya is closer to the concept of Vaishnavism. There's not anything but else.
Actually, the real Vaishnavism fellow in the line of Shankara is not Shankaracharya, it's Sadananda Yogendra.
Sadananda Yogendra.
The foremost Madhavadi in India.
Okay.
Right after Shankara.
Right after Shankaracharya. All the major deviations. Sadananda Yogendra. Yogendra. Okay. Okay.
That's what Vedananda,
so that maybe that person is a real thing. But also, Vivekananda said,
yeah.
I have a great impact in the West. And that philosophy is actually a mixture of the Greek philosophy, Platonian, the Neoplatonian.
Okay.
That is one who emanates
into
many.
One who emanates.
Okay. It's not there, it's home.
Right. Okay, so here we have deviations upon deviations upon deviations, but the origin was here.
Jagat,
The origin was here at the Daksha Yagya of all these deviations. And we'll find also a lot of deviations will be introduced by Indra. In the Prithu sacrifice, there will be more deviations coming, introduced by Indra himself. So many, and then more Vivekananda, who knows what incarnation he actually was. Okay, we got a lot of hands. Parvati?
So we just finished. This is it. A big fight at the yoga.
Yeah?
Daksha walked out.
Yeah.
Shiva walked out.
Daksha walked out?
And
Shiva walked out, and the followers of Shiva followed him.
So then the last two verses of the chapter are, there's a sacrifice for thousands of years.
The sacrifice went on. Huh? Yeah, that's what Prabhupada says in the purport. They continued without Lord Shiva and Daksha. The sages just went on, did the sacrifice. Okay, we have 1 minute, Madhavendra Puri.
Oh, this is what Prashant was saying, getting Buddha, Vritti and Mukhya.
Gauna Vritti and Mukhya Vritti.
Both indicate to Lord Krishna.
Both?
Indicate to Lord Krishna.
Achha.
We shouldn't disagree that Mukhya.
Oh, indicate Lord Krishna, you're saying.
Yes, and Gauna Vritti indicates not Lord Krishna.
It's covered.
No, not even. Lord Chaitanya told Rupa Goswami right there. That's Rupa Goswami. Mukhya Gauna Vritti, Kinva Anvaya Vritti, Vedira Pratikya Kedala Prahaya Krishna. When one accepts Vedic literature, by dictionary reading or even by interpretation, directly or indirectly, the ultimate revelation of the Vedic knowledge comes to Lord Krishna.
Everything. Last comment.
Yeah, this is why we use it like we Vaishnavas. We use both.
Yes.
Yeah. But we can, because we accept the basic principle, Krishna says I was born of the Veda. So we accept that. And we use the Goya Vritti where the words come up clear and in order to point at Krishna.
Okay. Okay, so this is a very good clarification here. Madhavendra Puri was saying Gauna Vritti and Mukhya Vritti both indicate Lord Krishna. This is true in the case of Vaishnavas, but it's not true in the case of the impersonalists. Impersonalists use the Gauna Vritti to cover the truth. So, thank you for that last comment.
And they use both regardless.
They use also Mukhya Vritti too. They use Gauna Vritti and Mukhya Vritti to cover, and the Vaishnavas use Gauna Vritti and Mukhya Vritti to uncover Krishna, to point to Krishna. Okay, so with that, we'll end the class, and we'll see you tomorrow. You have chapter 3. Do you have a schedule? Do you have a schedule for Braj Bihari Prabhu of the verses? Okay, so tomorrow it's chapter 3, verses 1 to 14. Oh, okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.